Welcome, brave souls, to Stories to Dismember, where nightmares are unleashed and horror takes center stage. Together, we'll embark on a chilling journey to the darkest realms of cinema, dissecting bone-chilling tales that will haunt your dreams. So buckle up, dear listener, as we embark on a cinematic odyssey filled with screams, suspense, and the kind of horror that lingers long after the credits roll. Welcome to a world where fear has a name and nightmares come to life. This is Stories to Dismember, the podcast that will leave you breathless and begging for mercy. Welcome back to Stories to Dismember. This week, we are continuing our series on movies that are haunted, or towns that are haunted, I should say. And I am Aaron, and I am here with Ariel and Azrael.
Oh, hello.
Hello. Greetings.
Yeah, didn't forget them this time, yeah. And this week, we are doing my pick, which is Chernobyl Diaries from 2012. I have a little synopsis I got here. Chernobyl Diaries is a horror film directed by Bradley Parker that follows a group of friends on an extreme tourism trip to Pripyat. Is that how they said it?
Abandoned. You're asking the wrong person.
The abandoned city near the Chernobyl nuclear disaster site. As they explore the eerie, desolate landscape, they soon realize they are not alone, encountering mysterious and deadly entities. The film combines elements of found footage and supernatural horror, creating a tense and atmospheric experience for viewers. This week, our guide through Chernobyl is going to be Azrael. Cough clap.
Golf claps.
Take it away.
All right. Yeah. So the movie starts out very much like the Blair Witch Project. You get first person camera footage of a group of friends going through an airport, traveling to Kyiv. Chris is going to see his brother Paul, and so the four people end up in Kyiv to see Paul. They have some, they're getting acquainted once they arrive. And Chris talks to his brother Paul about, wanting to propose to his girlfriend. Once they get to Moscow, Chris and Paul are brothers. Eventually, they go out and they get drunk one night. So, of course, they're hanging the next day. Paul shows up at a restaurant while they're there trying to order food and tells them that he had met a guy named Yuri, who does the extreme tourism, and about taking them to a town, which I believe is pronounced Pripyat, which is just outside of Chernobyl. So they do a vote. They all agree to go, and they show up to this place called Yuri's Extreme Travel. It's the name of the business.
Has anybody ever done any extreme tourism?
I've done some urban exploring. I guess
we like cemeteries and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
wow, that's cool. Yeah,
it could be considered like climbing mountains and doing different things, stuff like that. I mean, I swam with sharks.
Yeah, I'm not that daring. heights scare me. Sharks, I'm not too fond of. I'm actually just not fond of the ocean in general, so I'm pretty boring in that regard.
That's good risk management, though.
Yeah. It is. Yeah, I'm trying to extend my life as much as possible because I enjoy it so much most of the time. But I do weird stuff, but nothing extreme, I would say. Like, I wouldn't be like, hey, let's go risk cancer and go to this really cool site.
Right.
That's just not my vibe, you know?
Well, we got a Geiger counter. You'd be fine.
Yeah, I don't always trust those equipment. I mean, I'm sure they're fine, but I can also just get maybe 0.1% risk of cancer by being on a beach somewhere, you know?
Well, I mean, you do live in Texas, so it's probably more like 0.02%.
Probably. But, you know, I used to live in California, and according to Prop 65, everything in California could possibly give you cancer.
You're radiating. Yeah.
Yeah. I think at this point I probably have it. So maybe going to a radioactive center is probably not the best idea once you already have the California cancer. But if anyone's got any ideas of non-lethal, non-chemical extreme tourism, I'd be totally down for that. Like a bone museum, or in Houston, there's a cemetery museum that I want to check out. I think it's a cemetery
museum.
It's a funeral service museum.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what they call it. Mortuary museum? I don't know.
I went to a death museum in New Orleans.
Oh.
Oh, interesting. Oh, that would be so cool. What did you see there? What was the craziest thing you saw there?
They had videos of people.
Snuff films?
Fair warning to the listeners. If you don't want to listen, skip ahead about 10 seconds. They had videos of people like unaliving themselves.
What?
Yeah.
That is not what I expected when you said death museum. I was thinking like those people that get embalmed and like propped up or something, you know, in Louisiana.
They had pictures of serial killer victims and.
Oh.
All kinds of stuff, yeah.
Oh my gosh. That might be too much for me. I mean, I'm no wimp, but that seems pretty brutal to have a whole museum dedicated to that.
Yeah, my wife didn't really enjoy it.
She's like, worst date ever, Aaron.
She's like, nope, I'll go, you know, she'll go hang out in the gift shop, ideally at a death museum, yeah.
Oh my gosh. I went to the what is it called? Dealey Plaza or Dealey Square, where JFK was shot. And there was a guy standing outside with pictures of JFK's head blown out.
Oh.
And he was just like showing it to people. And I'm like, can you please not, sir? Like, I'm trying to enjoy my non-grotesque tourism. But I guess that would be called like dark tourism, right?
Dark tourism, yeah.
Yeah, not so much. I'm more of a dark tourist, not a extreme tourist.
There was a series on Netflix that was Dark Tourism.
Yes.
That was really cool.
Watch that.
Oh, yeah. God. With what's his name? Thoreau or something?
I think so.
Yeah. British guy. Yeah,
he went to Irradiated City in Japan.
Yes, he did. I remember that episode. He also did a death like tour as well.
Yeah. Yep. And he swam in a lake that was created by a nuclear blast.
Wow, he is just really playing his card. He's like Dr. Terror's House of Horrors right now.
Yes.
Okay, so Chernobyl.
Chernobyl. So, so Yuri gets them together in his van and drives out to Pripyat, which is about 2 hours away from where they're at, which is in Kiev, as they pronounce it in the, I think that could be the correct pronunciation. So while they're on the way to this town, Yuri kind of gives them a brief summary of what happened at Chernobyl, about the nuclear reactor 4 and what happened. I really like the quote that Yuri gave to the group saying that, you know, nature has reclaimed its rightful home. He first said it in Ukrainian, and then, of course, they asked for the translation. So they get to what he called an exclusion zone or a checkpoint, and Yuri got out, talked to the guards at the gate, and the guards informed him that they were not allowed to enter today. Maintenance was the reason, which Yuri thought that was unusual because they normally would advise him in advance that they weren't allowing people in. At this point, Paul, you know, points out that they had already paid for the trip. So Yuri decides to take an alternate route to the town. So once they get to another checkpoint, and Yuri has to get out and like move a barricade to the side and then bring the van in. And we get a shot from like a bridge of the town, and Yuri tells them that this is the town where the workers and families of Chernobyl lived. So one of the first stops on the tour, Yuri takes him to a lake. He goes down, puts his hand in the water, and starts, you know, waving it around. And he initially just scares him, pretending that something had grabbed his hand that was in the water. And then he shows the group that there was like this looked like a mutant type fish. It might be an actual species, I don't know, but it looked like a mutant, or maybe that's the way he was portraying it. But it kind of had like sharp teeth. It was on the edge. And Michael goes to poke the fish, and it, you know, it looks like it was still alive. So they all freak out. And then they...
It actually looks like a blobfish to me. And if you guys don't know what a blobfish is, definitely Google it.
A blobfish? No.
No, I'm scared.
It's just like this big, like, round, fleshy fish. It's so ugly. But then, like, in the water, too, after he's done poking the fish, you see these other fish in the water, and I guess they're also mutated or something.
Yeah, it looked like it might have been the same type of fish floating around.
Okay. I thought they were, like, a lot smaller or something. But, yeah, this thing looks very gross. It's almost, like, flesh-colored and doesn't have scales, so that's kind of eerie.
Yeah, it does look like a blobfish.
Did you guys recognize the Ukrainian, like, Yuri guy?
No. Has he been in other things? Other movies?
Yeah, he has. But mostly for voice acting. So he plays a lot of like Russian characters in video games. And I think he was also in Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Really?
And he's been like not the lead or anything in movies, but he's just kind of been part of, you know, just part of a Russian kind of soldier looking guy.
Okay.
Yeah, apparently he was like an Iron Man as well. So he's been in some Marvel stuff, but mostly voice acting for video games.
Okay. I thought he did really good for his character.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I thought he kind of looked like he could be related to Brendan Frazier.
From...
I think everybody calls him Brendan Fraser.
From the show? The TV show Frazier?
No. Brendan Fraser from The Whale.
Oh, Brendan Fraser. I'm sorry.
I recently heard that like Fraser is not how you pronounce his name.
Frazier.
I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm just trying to pronounce it other than Fraser. I think it's Frazier or something like that. Something weird. But anyways, I thought they kind of looked like they could pass as being like cousins or something. And my husband was like, no, not seeing it. So, but this actor actually passed away, I think, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But I've also heard some controversial things about him that he's done. So if you love animals and hate animal abuse, I would not look up his history.
I didn't know he was from San Francisco.
I mean, yeah, it seems like he's in Hollywood quite a bit if he's doing all of these different projects.
He's originally from San Francisco? Yeah.
He was born and raised there. Oh,
Jesus.
I mean, hey, you know.
Yeah, Alameda County, California.
I wonder if he even has an accent.
Probably not.
He probably has like a Californian accent, like from SNL.
Well, maybe grew up in the Ukrainian district of San Francisco.
There is no Ukrainian district in San Francisco.
It's like one street.
There's like one enclave. So this movie was actually like filmed in Prilep, or whatever that town's name is. It was filmed there on location.
Oh.
Obviously not at the reactor site, but in some of the exclusion zones, like outside of the exclusion zones, it was filmed in that area.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, they had other like, you know, locations in like Serbia and stuff like that. But mainly what you see, you know, the buildings and everything is what's actually in that exclusion zone area.
Wow. That's actually pretty cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was like they were far enough away from the zone for it to be safe for them to film there. But I was like, dang, this is a really good production, but it's really good because it's real.
That's where it really happened.
Right.
Yeah. You're actually in the damn town.
I'm like, wow, how did they get the tree to grow through the building like that? Right. Well, because it actually freaking did.
That's pretty cool.
I don't think the bears are real, though.
Oh, no. CGI. Okay. So Yuri, while they're headed to Pripyat, informs the, you know, the group, the town's been in abandoned for the, you know, 25 years. And then only recently that the radiation levels have gone down low enough to where it's safe for, you know, people to go back to. And that, when the town was open, it had about 50,000 people living there. The group, begins to explore, you know, the abandoned town, going into various buildings. At one point before the tour seems to be over, Yuri tells the group that he wants to show them one more thing, you know, before the tour is over. And they enter one of the other housing complexes. And from the balcony view of one of the apartments, you can see Chernobyl. And he points out that you can clearly see the, you know, fourth nuclear reactor far off in the distance. So Yuri tells them that, you know, go ahead and take some pictures. So while the group's taking pictures, Yuri starts walking around the apartment. And in another room, he notices that there is a small pile of smoldering debris, which indicates that somebody had recently been there. So Yuri kicks over the debris and tells the group that they should leave before it gets dark. So just as they're about to exit the apartment room, they all hear like a crashing sound off in the distance. So they all go to investigate where the sound's coming from. And Yuri tells them at one point, the group, to stay back while he goes to investigate. So Yuri proceeds down a hallway and then he eventually goes around the corner out of sight. So while they're all standing there waiting, you know, for Yuri to figure out what's going on, a bear emerges out of a room and just starts barreling down the hallway towards the group. So they all scatter, get out of the way, and the bear continues on down the hallway. So the group quickly exits the building and get back to the van. So as Yuri's trying to start the van's not starting. So Yuri opens up the engine compartment, which is inside the van, and finds that the spark plugs had been chewed through. So the van's inoperable. Yuri attempts to get help by a walkie-talkie, but is not getting any response. So now it's dark out. It's nighttime. Yuri suggests that, you know, they could just stay in the van until morning. So the group starts arguing about, you know, it's not a good idea. They don't want to stay there all night. So they eventually begin hearing what sounds like a baby crying. At this point, everyone's starting to get paranoid. Yuri's telling them it can't be, that, you know, there's nobody out there. The town's abandoned. So he goes into the glove box of the van, pulls out a gun, tells him to stay there. He's going to go out and investigate. So Chris gets kind of frustrated and decides that he's going to go along with Yuri. So everyone else is in the van waiting to see, you know, what happens. And you hear two gunshots. Paul then decides to exit and head towards the direction of where the shots came from. And then Chris and Paul eventually make it back to the van, screaming to get back inside. It's clear that Chris had been attacked. His left ankle is severely injured. He starts saying that a pack of dogs attacked them and that the dogs had gotten Yuri. He also indicated at some point that there was other things out in the woods. And a short time later, the dogs that attacked them encircle the van, begin barking and clawing at the windows in a, you know, ferocious manner outside. So then we jump ahead. Now it's morning. Yuri hasn't come back. Michael had attempted to fix the van, but says, you know, he doesn't have the necessary parts. In the toolbox, Michael finds that there was another walkie-talkie. So he tries to contact. He didn't try to contact Yuri. Paul tries to call Yuri on the radio. So eventually, Paul, Michael, and Amanda decide that they're going to go out on foot to find Yuri, leaving the others behind in the van. So on the way to find Yuri, they begin talking amongst themselves about, you know, what may have attacked Yuri and Chris. And Amanda, you know, brings up about how Chris and the knight talked about something else was out being in the woods. Paul tries to remain optimistic, saying that, you know, it was animals, like you said, maybe it was a bear that did it. So they try to use the radio again to contact Yuri, and Amanda begins to hear the the radio traffic nearby, and they discover that the other radio, which belonged to Yuri, was on a steps that were leading down to a building. So they decide to go into the building, and they, you know, locate a trail of blood that leads into like a kitchen. And they find Yuri's body, which was mutilated, on the ground. They begin searching his pockets, and then they start hearing movement outside the door they came through. So they scatter. Paul and Michael are able to make it through a door. Exit through a door, and Amanda gets stuck, and she stands behind a counter while this entity kind of enters the kitchen. So she's waiting, and she watches this thing come in, kind of trudges through the kitchen. So she decides she's got to get out of there. She could see Paul through the door with his head telling her to, like, you know, get out. So she starts crawling on all four towards the door. While she's doing so, she can see that, you know, human entity type thing is over Yuri's body doing something, and notices that there was his gun underneath a shelf. So she quickly grabs the gun and books it towards the door. And then Paul and Michael are able to lock it behind her. And then at which point the entity or whatever starts, you know, banging on the door. Paul, who had the gun, ends up firing three shots to the door. And then they escape out of the building to make it back to the van where Chris and Natalie were. So they realize that they got to get out of there. But, you know, because Chris is so badly injured, they're going to stay behind while the rest go and try to get help and come back. While they're talking in the van, Amanda picks up her camera for some reason and decides to go back through the photos. And she notices that in one of the pictures she took of the building that there was a figure in the window. So before they leave, Paul gives the gun to Natalie and the other radio and tells them, you know, they'll remain in radio contact and that they'll be back with help. So Paul, Michael, Zoe, and Amanda start walking, you know, trying to get out of the city. And they end up taking an alternate route due to the group of dogs that they find that were on the roadway eating what looked like roadkill. So they eventually stumble on a lot of cars, and they figure they can, you know, find parts to take back to the van and get it going. They notice that there was like a bus in the middle of all these cars that had bullets. Looked like somebody from the inside maybe had shot out. So they find eventually in one of the vehicles, same type van, they get the spark plugs and they decide they can go back to the van and get it going, which I don't know how they would have because the battery was dead, which I knew from the previous night. So I don't know how they would have gotten the van going, but maybe they weren't thinking.
Well, they did say they could push start it.
Oh, push start.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. It was clutch. So maybe. So they, while they're taking the part back, the dogs find them and begin chasing them. So they again take another alternate route back to the van, and they have to cross like this broken down, unstable looking wooden bridge. Michael and Zoe, end up in the water, and at some point Michael gets his leg cut. So it's nightfall again, and they escape the dogs, but now they're trying to, make their way back to the van. They start discussing, everything that's been going on, all the weird events that have taken place up until then. And while they're talking in the distance, you can see like a shadowy figure run across the roadway. And then they begin to hear like a growling noise. So they just take off running. They make it back to the town where the van should be, but it's not there. Michael notices that the chair from the van is laying on the ground. And I think there's like a path of debris from the van. So they follow it behind a building and they locate the van, which is now upside down, and Chris and Natalie are gone. So while they're looking at the van, looking inside, Amanda finds a camera, tells the group that it's still recording, and they go and, review the footage of what took place. And this is really, this kind of reminded me of like the Blair Witch Project now, as they're looking at the footage. So you have the firsthand camera view of inside the van. Chris was talking about how he was going to propose, and then something on the outside attacks the van and like literally physically rolls his van to where they found it. So then Paul is adamant of finding his brother. So they begin running through the town looking for Chris and Natalie. They eventually find blood outside a building. They go through the building trying to find them. Out of nowhere, this like wooden crate flies across the room. And then they see like a shadowy again, like another figure standing in the room. And they book it out of there, which leads them to eventually finding Natalie in another hallway. So she appears to be in shock. She's just screaming. So they're trying to get out of there. Michael, on the way out, finds a map on a wall, and they exit the building. And while they're leaving the building, Paul begins to question Natalie about, what happened to Chris. She eventually just tells him that the people got him. So at this point, Paul is really reluctant to leave his brother behind. Amanda's able to convince him that, they need to get help first before then they'll come back to find Chris. So they're trying to follow this map. They appear to get lost. Maybe the map's not accurate, or maybe they read it wrong, so they're lost. So they're stopping, trying to figure out what route they need to take. And all of a sudden, a little girl shows up behind them. So they all start moving towards them, or towards the little girl. Paul tries to communicate her speaking Ukrainian. At this point, Natalie gets, dragged away down the staircase by some type of shadowy figure. So the group now is trying to track down Natalie by following her screams. They eventually come to like this large opening, trying to determine which way they need to go. And then they realize that there's a large group of these beings now behind them that are like growling. So they take off. They end up going down a flight of stairs and they get to like a locked door. There appears to be no other way out. And the beings start moving towards them. Amanda manages to break the lock off of the door so they can all get inside, and they attempt to barricade the door as these beings are trying to get through. This is kind of like, reminded me almost like Night of the Living Dead, because Zoe gets grabbed at one point, the arm goes through the door and like holding her neck. I was like, oh, it's Night of the Living Dead.
I was also going to make another mention of Night of the Living Dead at the very end, right before the last scene.
Yep.
Yeah, where you think the people are coming to help you and you're like, ah, shit.
It'd be like that sometimes.
You're in a hospital.
Got another one for the fire.
Yep. So while they're stuck in this room, Paul manages to find that there's another way out, and they now descend down another flight of steps deeper into this building, which looks almost like now a bomb shelter with this blast door.
I think it was Zoe. She's like, it goes down.
Keep going down.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to go down either.
No. The door is pretty heavy. So as Paul is trying to pull it closed, you know, Michael's from the outside trying to push it. As they're getting it closed, the beings end up grabbing Michael, and Paul's able to close the door and secure it. So Paul and Adeline now and Amanda continue going through this underground bunker. At one point, one of the rooms looked like there was a lot of old medical equipment, and they eventually exit through another blast type door, and they can continue hearing the growling sounds in the distance. So they eventually have to now again descend further into this bunker, and they come to kind of like this large opening, and they think this is where maybe those beings that's been chasing them might have lived. Paul notices the ring that Chris was going to use as an engagement ring for Natalie outside this tent. And then he attempts to kind of look inside to see if maybe Chris is inside the tent. And then this entity or being on all fours just starts like crawling towards them. So they take off and they find a ladder to escape. Unfortunately, the horde of beings grab Zoe and pull her off the ladder. So now it's just Paul and Amanda. They make it out, and now they're running into, they make it up another flight of stairs. Look like a control room to me. And trying to find their way out, the Geiger counter that Paul had starts going off loud. And then you notice that they're starting to get blisters on their skin, their face, which would indication that the radiation levels are extremely high where they're at. And Paul kind of loses his vision to see. As they're moving through the building, they eventually find Zoe's body on the ground. She's dead, but the beings are close by, closing in on them. So they find an opening and try to make it out. However, they're attacked by two of these beings, but they manage to fight them off. And then once they exit the building, you can see the smokestacks, which indicating that they were inside one of the reactors for Chernobyl. There's a what looks like military forces outside start ordering them, and it may be Russian or Ukrainian, telling them to stop moving. Amanda, you know, gets on the ground. Paul, who, you know, he kind of lost his sight from the radiation, keeps moving towards the military personnel, and they end up shooting him in the chest.
I have a question.
Yeah.
He spoke to them in English. Why didn't he speak to them in Ukrainian at least?
I thought the same thing. Maybe he was just panicked.
I guess.
But yeah, she got on the ground. She didn't speak Ukrainian. I mean, people pointing guns at me, I would assume they don't want me to move any closer to them.
Right.
Even if you can't see, you kind of know if you're moving closer or not.
Yeah. And Paul should have, if he spoke Ukrainian, he should have understood what they were saying.
Yeah, I don't think radiation affects your hearing too much.
No. So,
although maybe his ears were bleeding. I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe it made him dumb. I don't know.
It could have reduced his intelligence. So Amanda, she passes out. Paul's dead. And next thing she wakes up, she's now inside an ambulance. You know, there's medical personnel wearing radiation protective equipment. One of the guys starts questioning her, asking her, you know, how did you get into the town? Does anybody else know that you were there? And they inform her that, you know, the things that she encountered in the town were escaped patients that were victims of radiation poisoning. So she's eventually taken to a hospital. And as they're moving her on a gurney, medical personnel, you know, looking her over. And one guy, maybe a doctor or scientist, tells the other guys that, you know, she's seen these people and that she can't leave here because, you know, she knows too much. So they take her off to gurney, they throw her into this dark room, and she sees that there's like a whole group of these things that she encountered in the town, and they just attack her. And the movie ends with the little viewing window of the door being shut.
If I was in a predicament like this, and there was a bunch of strange people asking me, does anyone know that you're here? I would immediately say, everyone knows I'm here. I posted it on Facebook.
Yeah, I literally thought the same thing.
Yeah, then all
the whole world knows, and that's a lie. But they don't know that,
right?
I got a million followers. They know where I'm at.
Yeah, I literally thought the same thing, but maybe in the panic, I guess they're not thinking.
Yeah, I will give her the benefit of the doubt that radiation poisoning to the face is definitely going to scatter your thoughts.
What'd you guys think?
I mean, I like the song they played for the credits.
I have some questions. Can I ask some questions?
Yeah. Sure.
Question number one, why is it called Chernobyl Diaries? Like, what is the diary part of the movie?
Yeah, it was misleading. I thought immediately of Zombie Diaries. Is that George Romero's one of his last ones?
I think so, yeah. I was just wondering, are they like students, you know, researching, or did they stumble upon some sort of video archive of the Chernobyl people living in there? I don't see the tie-in to the diaries part. Did they edit out a scene and forgot to change the title? Like, were the diaries the medical logs of the people that still lived in the town? Because I'm assuming that's what that was all about, right? They're researching radiation exposure to people.
Maybe they cut a scene where one of the characters, like, journal.
Dear diary, I hope my boyfriend proposes to me soon. Hearts.
There you go. Solved.
Okay. All right. Another question. First comment. Bear looked very, very healthy. If that bear was actually in like a, you know, radiation zone, I would imagine that bear to look a little bit more tore up, but that looked like somebody's pet, you know?
He's been eating all those dogs.
He looked like he was running from something and not too
Yeah, something. And then we don't see where the bear goes. It just runs across the room, which was the scariest part of the whole movie for me. But yeah, if you're a bear living in an area like that, I would expect you to look a little scrawny and skinny, maybe some mangy hair or something. That would be a lot more effective and scary, especially since it's a CGI bear, you know? You could make it look however you want. So definitely should have gone with the man bear pig idea. So that was that comment. Another question. When they're going through the town, I guess, I mean, they're going from building to building. It's kind of hard to understand where they're actually going through, but they stumble upon a guard who's upside down and dead. And I think they say, oh, that was one of the guards. But why was he there alone?
Yeah.
And why was he hanging upside down and not like fudged up like Yuri?
He might have been, making him into jerky. I don't know.
Making him into jerky. So these people escaped, but they're not cannibals, right? Like the people that escaped into the city, which is why they shut it down for maintenance. Those people are like patients in this hospital, right?
Yeah, because they didn't kill. That's the thing. I thought when they got to the ladder and they took Zoe, I thought they're eating Zoe. You know, Yuri's body was mutilated, but when they found Zoe's body later, she wasn't eaten.
Yeah.
So did they drag her there? Yeah, I was kind of confused about that part. And then the end of the movie, did they eat Amanda?
Yeah, I don't understand like the whole craze thing. Like, why don't they attack each other, but then they attack her? I don't get that.
No,
yeah, it's kind of weird.
And then the kid. So like they are having babies now, or with the scene under the bridge with the little kid,
right?
They look like oh god, what they look like Sloth, okay, from the Goonies. But yet the kid looks totally fine. Like the kid looks normal, I guess. Right?
Right. It's Gif's generation.
Gotcha. Okay. That's the explanation I was missing. Okay. Yeah. I think that's it in terms of questions.
She might have three lungs or something. I don't know.
She's right. Like, I have a third arm in my back. She's like, nice to meet you. It's like a third arm that comes out of her back. What was your guys' scariest scene in this movie?
I think it was the bear.
Yeah, jump. It was pretty sudden.
Yeah.
What about you, Aaron?
I would say probably when the dogs start chasing him. Only because I've been in that situation before. So I kind of know what you're thinking and what's happening in your brain when a pack of dogs are chasing you.
Yeah, that is pretty scary. And then he like jumps into the water and then gets eaten by those piranha blobfish things.
Blobfish. Although there was something funny in that scene that I was going to mention earlier. You know, all these dogs are chasing them to that little bridge, and the dogs are jumping and barking and acting all mad and mean. And there's one just sitting there wagging his tail. I guess that's the one the handlers couldn't get to act mean during the scene or something. I don't know. He was just happy to be there.
dogs can still wag their tails if they're, maybe they were happy to see this guy get eaten alive by the fish. The dog's like, yes, look justice. At this fool. I do feel bad for that guy. I got to say, out of all the characters, I thought he was the most courageous. And because Yuri is a courageous character, too, but he's got some size on him. This other guy, I think his name's Michael. Is that the?
Yeah.
Okay. He's not a big guy. But as soon as, I think her name's Natalie or Nicole, Natalie. As soon as Natalie gets taken, he's like protecting her. You know, as soon as she starts slipping and falling into the water, he dives in, no question. You know, so I think out of all of them, he's the most brave.
Yeah, seemed like it.
Yeah.
And he was kind of like a side character, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, but I feel like he like saved their ass in a lot of ways.
Yeah, he did.
Interesting.
Oh, also another thing. I just thought about it. So they get to, they're looking for car parts and they see a bus and they're saying that the bullet holes are coming from the inside of the bus out. What did that mean? He's like, oh, the bullet holes aren't going in, they're going out.
Right. Like all of a sudden Paul's an expert on like
ballistics.
Ballistics.
The only thing I thought of was that, was it supposed to mean that the horde was outside and somebody was in the van shooting out? But I don't know.
The horde, like as if there were like hella people that were infected just instantly.
Right. So were the zombies escape or the people escaping the patients on multiple occasions?
Like, yeah, but that bus was so old and like just broken.
Right. Like,
so
bad writing, maybe.
I have no idea. I'm like, okay, well, so did this happen like when Chernobyl happened 25 years ago and people were trying to escape and. But then why, who was in the bus shooting out of it? You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't make sense.
No.
And they just made a point to point it out. They did. Like, even like, to show that the bullet holes were not going in, they were going out. And I'm like, something. But why?
Right. I kept wondering, yeah. Something's missing.
Maybe they're setting us up for part two. Then there we came.
Yeah, there's not a lot of horror movies about Chernobyl, which is surprising to me. Not a lot of, like, nuclear horror.
No. Did they make a part two?
Mm-mm. No.
I thought they were supposed
Although
to.
This movie did make its money back. It, I think it cost, the budget was $1 million, and it made globally $38
million. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of disappointment.
Yeah, because I think, did this guy, I think this guy worked on Paranormal Activity or something like that.
The director?
Yeah, I think I was reading something. He did like the screenplay for that or something.
Because
I'm not really into those movies, so I don't know.
The writer, right, was like, he's like Dick Van Dyke's. There's some relation there.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Shane Van Dyke. He's like a grandson, I think.
Oh, that's cool. Oren Peli is the director. Yeah, Paranormal Activity. He directed it.
Okay. Is that the most recent one? I don't know.
Is this 2007? The first one.
Oh, the first one. Oh, the first one was good for its time.
Yeah.
Which was 10 years before this one.
Right. Yeah, that one was good.
Have you guys, in terms of like nuclear horror movies, have you ever seen that 1984 movie called Threads? It's a British. No. It's very good. It's very, very good. It's, I would say it's the best horror movie, even though it's not supposed to be horror. It's just so realistic that it's horrific, and it's about a nuclear fallout and a nuclear winter that happens.
Now I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's produced by the BBC. It came out in 1984, and then very strangely Chernobyl happened in 1986, just 2 years later after this movie came out.
Wow. Interesting. I'll check it out. Oh, it says the closest you'll ever want to come to nuclear war.
It's pretty horrific. There's some tough scenes in there for sure, and it's really a very bleak movie. It's not even really considered horror for the stylistic part of it. It's just supposed to be the most real portrayal of a nuclear fallout and what would happen to a city. I think you guys would like it. I think it's on Tubi, if you guys have Tubi.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out then. Yeah, it's in queue.
So I've been really trying to dance around rating this film, as you can tell.
This is part of the show where we do our ratings. You want to go first, Ariel?
Yeah. I did not like this movie. I'm so sorry. I know a lot of people like this movie. I saw that commented quite a bit. I'm going to give it a 2 blobfish out of 10.
2?
Yeah.
Must have been something you liked.
Yeah, it was kind of jumpy. Like, there was a lot of jump scares that got me, but... And I feel like this movie had a good idea, but didn't execute it correctly.
I can
So it wasn't the most terrible thing I've ever seen. You know, it's not a 1.
Yeah.
So it's a 2.
All right. Fair enough. Azrael, you want to go next?
Yeah, that's fine. I think we all kind of covered everything in the movie. It was my first time watching it. Initially, I didn't like it. Watching it, the beginning, I'm like, oh, it's like the Blair Witch Project. I thought it was going to be kind of that handheld camera. And the dialogue when they were in the apartment when Chris met Paul and talking about, you know, proposing, I'm like, I didn't really care for any of that. The movie kind of did get a little bit better, some of the dialogue. I really liked the Yuri character. I think he was probably the best in the movie. I think the movie had a lot of potential, but as Ariel pointed out, it falls short in a lot of spots. I wish I would have seen more of the, whatever they were, patients, zombies, the people that were affected by the radiation. So I would have to give it like a 4.1. 4.1. I'll just say Yuri's. I can't think of anything else from the movie. 4.1 Yuri's.
Does sound like a denomination money.
Yeah, like rubles.
Yeah. You owe me 100,000 Yuri's.
Yeah, it does sound like a currency.
Yeah. All right. Well, I will say about this movie that it did start off like a found footage type of movie. And what I got from it, because it kept a perspective of some unknown person who was with the group, and you saw the movie through that person's camera.
Yeah, I did like the movie for that cinematography, but it wasn't consistent enough, I don't think. So like some parts where it's like handheld, and then other parts it was too stabilized to where I realized that they weren't handheld anymore. Because I was going to bring up like the joke that there was somebody who did survive and it was the camera guy the whole time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you kind of get that perspective.
Yeah, I think it was very effective, but I think they should have stuck to it a little bit harder.
I can agree with that.
Yeah, jumped around too much.
The setting of the film and the premise had potential, like we said. The execution wasn't there. Could have been more thought put into the movie. As far as every character had to die, and they had to die by making every mistake you would make in real life, like running off down inside a nuclear reactor or going off in the woods and looking for something, or what's that noise and let's go check it out, you know, stuff normal people wouldn't do. But in a horror movie, it's been done so many times, you just expect them to do what they're not supposed to do because they're supposed to die, right? This is a horror movie. The execution could have been better. I didn't hate this movie. I didn't really like it so much. But, I mean, if you have an hour and a half to kill and you just want to see people make stupid mistakes in a movie, I would give it a watch. I am going to give this 5 radioactive German Shepherds out of 10.
Those were definitely dire wolves. How dare you?
Right.
All right. Well, that's Chernobyl Diaries for this week. Next week, we are doing Ariel's pick, and the movie is the 2004 M. Night Shyamalan movie. Can you guess? The Village. If you haven't seen it yet, you can watch it before our next episode, or if you want to wait for our reviews before you see it, that will be our next episode, and we will cover The Village. Yay.
Whoop, whoop.
I didn't know it had Sigourney Weaver in it.
Oh, yes, it does.
William Hurt. And
there are so many Joe actors Phoenix. In this movie that went on to be like absolute star actors.
I knew Bryce Dallas Howard was in it.
Yes. Yeah. But even actors that I know of now, that when you go back and watch it, you're like, whoa, that guy's in this? You know, a lot of horror movie actors, too. Like the guy that plays the stoner guy in Cabin in the Woods, Marty. I think is his name in Cabin in the Woods. He's in The Village. And then also one of the lead guys in the American adaptation of Funny Games is also in The Village. So you start to see these actors when they were very young and just starting out and kind of getting bigger and bigger roles.
It's got Adrian Brody.
Yep.
Fran Kranz, which you were talking about, Marty. Jesse Eisenberg. We used to have a running joke when we first started this podcast, or when I first started, that Fran Kranz was our favorite actor. We were going to try to get him on the show just because it seemed like he was the fun guy in all the horror movies that we watched.
Hey, you know, that's always still an idea. He's been in a lot of stuff recently, too, that I've seen him in. But not horror related. It's more drama.
You said Bryan Cranston, isn't it?
Fran Cranston.
Oh, it's a Bryan Cranston.
Shut up.
Yeah, I just saw him recently in, what was he in? I'm trying to think of the movie. Oh, he was in this TV show that my husband and I were watching. It's about Julia Child. And I think it's I don't know if it's a BBC production. But he plays like some sort of like TV executive guy.
Oh, that was a series, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's on HBO, or it's on Max, I guess is what they call it now. Oh. But good TV show, and I was surprised to see him in it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Does it talk about her military when she was in the army?
It does not. No, it kind of picks up. It kind of picks up right before. Yeah, she becomes like a big star. You know,
oh, okay.
Not her military years. Okay. Doesn't go that far back. But they do. They do talk about it.
Yeah, that was always interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this is going to be exciting. And I guess it's been 20 years since I watched this movie. Wow.
That long.
Well, you need to get caught up.
I kind of started watching it a little while back, and then I got distracted. I'm easily distracted. All right. So join us next week when we cover The Village. We're glad you guys are here hanging out with us. And if you want
to be here,
and if you want to contact us, you can email us at storiestodismember@gmail.com. You can join our Facebook group, Stories to Dismember, Instagram, TikTok. All you have to do is search us, Stories to Dismember. You can even give us a call and leave a message or send us a text message at 817-405-4196. I'd love to hear from you guys. We've got a few before, and we like those. And we've had some suggestions that we have covered previously. So if you have a suggestion for either a movie or a theme, just let us know. And we'll make sure we do that for you. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. Well, I guess we need to get on the bus to Pripyat now and head on out.
You guys got your guns, right? Because we need to be shooting out of the bus.
I got a couple.
Just make sure you shoot out.
Not in. Shoot out. Bring an extra battery and extra spark plug wires.
My face is a little hot and burning. Do you guys feel that?
No, I can't see.
Yeah, right.
What?
What? Can't hear either. Alrighty. It's time to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
See ya.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Stories to Dismember podcast. Please be sure to tell your friends, subscribe, and leave a rating. You can contact us at storiestodismember@gmail.com, and we'd love to hear from you. You can also follow us on TikTok at Stories to Dismember. The music for Stories to Dismember is provided by Windfeather. Can't wait to hang out with you next time. Bye-bye.